Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Your homepage for horror is here. Fangoria.com is now live and brimming with the digital horror content you crave. Fangoria.com is your first destination for all the horror news of the day, featuring a constant curation of the Fango team's favorite links from across the internet. They are taking the time to aggregate the most important news in horror in one space to save you time and sanity. You'll also find long-form pieces, deep dives, and daily thoughts from the biggest names in horror, as well as exclusive access to the Fangoria Vault. Right now, all current subscribers to the magazine are automatically members of Fangoria.com. And as promised, the content of the new issues will forever be print only. If you're not already a subscriber, check out the new Fangoria.com for yourself and see the horror right before your eyes. Use promo code POSTMORTEM for 15% off right now. 15% off Fangoria and Fangoria.com. Promo code POSTMORTEM. I'm Mick Garris, and this is the Fun Size Postmortem AMA, where you can ask me anything. And asking your questions of me is producer Joe. Joe, how are you?
I'm well, Mick. How are you?
Just great. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you, and happy belated birthday to you. And,
Thank you.
By the time this airs, happy belated birthday to me.
Yay! And to our engineer, Christopher, who was only a few days before me.
Yeah, we're all Sagittarius.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yes.
So I figured since this is our year-end episode,
yeah,
we talk about some of the movies this year that meant the most to you, that you liked the most.
First of all, kind of amazing that we're now completing 3 years, of Postmortem Podcasts.
Which is amazing. And I guess we could probably announce that we're going for...
We are going for season four.
We're going for season four.
Yes, with our good friends at Fangoria who've been just the best home possible for us.
Yes, we love Fango. We love being a part of the Fango family.
Yes, indeed.
So we're approaching another end of the year. So tell me about some of the movies that you liked this year.
Well, there have been a few really good standout pictures.
It's actually been a pretty good year for movies.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I would say so. Well, you know, the big surprise for me was Ford v. Ferrari.
You liked Ford v. Ferrari?
That's a movie you would never expect me to be interested in whatsoever.
I liked it too.
And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
The performances are great. The writing is great.
Yeah.
The filmmaking is exceptional. I'm not usually into racing and sports movies of any kind. This one really did it for me.
Did you catch it in the theater or did you watch the screener?
Oh, no. You'd have to see that in a theater.
I agree. Just the engine revving. And, yeah.
I mean, I have an 86-inch screen, but still, it's not big enough to contain that movie.
I agree. Yeah, no, that is a surprise. I would not have expected that to be on the best of Mick Garris list,
yeah,
but I'm really glad it is. I really love the movie.
That's certainly in my top 10. The very top for me was Jojo Rabbit.
Yes, me too.
I think Taika Waititi is one of the great voices of filmmaking. And, you know, one of these days I'll watch Thor Ragnarok, but...
Not yet.
Not yet.
Jojo didn't get you there, huh?
Well, I love The Wilder People. I love What We Do in the Shadows.
Yep.
And then this was such an auteurist film. Yes. I mean, the writing and directing, I know it's based on a book that I haven't read, but...
Well, supposedly it's not like the book much
at all. Well, I can't imagine because it's such a cinematic experience.
Yes.
It starts out being a comedy.
Yes.
And it is so anything other than comedy. It ends up so deeply emotional and powerful. You know, really, really great. I really love that. Probably that would be leading my list. Right below that would be Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
You loved Once Upon a Time.
Loved it. Well, growing up in L.A. and seeing that period of time in Los Angeles depicted so beautifully and accurately. And there's obviously so much love for my city from Quentin, who also grew up here.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's... That alone would make it worthwhile, but the story and the revisionist history, and Brad Pitt is so funny and so good, you know. I got to know him a little bit working with Angelina on Unbroken, and really, really like him a lot. But to see him play this kind of character, and DiCaprio's great, and it's just an imaginative historical drama comedy.
No, it's terrific, and that ending is just it's worth, even if you think the movie's long, I think the ending is worth every second of it.
It didn't feel long to me at all.
It's immersive. It's an immersive movie, I think.
And it's energetic.
Yes.
You know,
it's never boring.
Is a year of 2.5 and 3 hour and 3.5 hour movies.
Yeah,
and that to me is usually a sign of.
Have you watched the 3.5 hour movie yet?
The Irishman, I did. And, you know, Martin Scorsese directed the first script I ever had produced on Amazing Stories called Mirror, Mirror. I'm not the credited writer on there. The original writer was the guy who wrote After Hours for him, Joseph Mignon.
Only the first guy to direct your stuff.
Yeah. And I'm a big Scorsese fan, but I liked it, but it's not... To me, when you look at the crime movies and everybody talking about this being such an elegy for Scorsese, for these characters and the like in the last hour, I didn't really feel that so much as just, you know, a movie that was really well made with great performances, particularly Al Pacino chewing the scenery like crazy.
Joe Pesci's wonderful in it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, he got the band back together.
The uncanny valley experience of the de-aging process, it was jarring to me. I know it's not supposed to be, but you can't help but know that De Niro is the age he is and seeing his face de-aged, but still moving like a senior.
Yes. You can't change the gait of
and so it detracted a bit, but look, Scorsese is a master and he's entitled to do whatever the fuck he wants to
absolutely. do. Absolutely. I do think the great irony though of him making another gangster movie and then critiquing Marvel for making the same movie over and over.
He's entitled just because of who he is and
absolutely.
What he has done.
Absolutely.
And all of that. So more power to him.
But the other movie that I think you really liked that you wanted to talk about was Parasite.
Parasite is great.
Yes.
I'm a big Bong Joon-ho fan, and we thought we were going to get him on the show. I met him several years ago.
We had very close calls and a lot of scheduling issues, but maybe down the road.
Yeah, I love the social satire of it, and I love that it's South Korean, and it feels like it could be American.
Yeah,
but the cultural difference is just enough to make it even more fascinating and powerful. But that movie, the satire of it is... it's so upstairs, downstairs in such a really fantastic way. It's really smart. Performances are great. And Bong Joon-ho has always imbued his movies with something really special. You know, I love The Host. That was the first one I was familiar with
him. Yeah, me too.
And it is the same lead actor who plays the father of the family. And, you know, it's so... fun. The Host, if you haven't seen that, is a great monster movie, and it's the characters are so rich and full and really funny. You know, it's really great stuff, and he's really a filmmaker who's quite special.
He's at the top of his craft, I think, too.
He right is. Now. Yeah. And he yeah. started out way
very,
up there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, so since it is our end of the year holiday episode, I thought we would talk about your experience working behind the scenes on one of our mutual friends, nightmare cinema filmmaker, genre legend, master of horror, Joe Dante's Gremlins. One of my favorite Christmas movies. I'm actually seeing it on the big screen tonight, which is
awesome.
Great. Yep.
Yeah.
So I want to hear about it. Tell me about how you got involved.
Well, it was great. You know, I started doing making ofs when I was doing publicity at Avco Embassy. I did the making of The Fog, the making of The Howling, the making of Scanners, and things like that. So I was trying to make my transition from publicist to filmmaker, and I was working doing publicity on films at Universal. And even though Gremlins was not a Universal film, it's a Warner Brothers picture.
Right.
I was working with Spielberg on E.T. and Poltergeist, which was an MGM picture, and all of that. So I'm cheaper to hire myself to do making of documentaries than anybody else. But it was thrilling to see it taking shape because I'd known Joe. I had met him in the 70s at a screening of Piranha, and it was amazing. And I had worked on The Howling.
You're in The Howling.
I'm in The Howling, yes. and to see him graduate from The Howling to this big studio, big budget, $10 million then, which was not a big budget, but for him.
Still a pretty big budget in the 80s.
But it was such an ambitious
sure.
movie with all
the puppetry
and animatronics and all that stuff. But it has Joe's sense of humor. It started out, the script by Chris Columbus was a straight horror movie.
Right.
And Joe's involvement and Spielberg's involvement, obviously, made it change course a little bit. And it was really fun to be on the set. I've got my 16mm crew there, you know, a cameraman and a sound man, just getting access for a few days. We didn't have access to the whole production schedule. But to be the fly on the wall as something was happening that I knew was going to be special. I didn't know it would become the perennial that it is.
Right.
And the true all-out classic. But it seems like so many films that came from Amblin in those days did end up that way.
And yeah, they really did.
But it made me feel like Zelig, the Woody Allen character, who's the little out-of-focus guy in the back of every picture with famous people in it, you know?
Now, when you did these behind the scenes, was it only during a specific portion of the production, or were you there the whole time kind of filming little pieces?
No, they couldn't afford to somebody do that. Well, they could, but they would say, this is a good day, the puppets are going to be working, this is a good day, Hoyt Axton is going to be there. You know, I think we had a total of 4 days.
So I do specifically remember seeing the making of in the Chinatown section.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the Hoyt Axton day.
Yes. Yeah.
And we knew that they were going to be shooting Chinatown then, and that would be atmospheric. It would be great to see in behind-the-scenes footage. So they would choose specific days. The same thing with the Goonies, although it was a little different circumstances. Another DGA director had been brought in because I was not a member of the Directors Guild, and I was the producer instead of director, but it ended up being different, you know.
But it must have been fun to see your friend Joe, you know, do on back behind the camera again.
It was great. You know, we knew each other and we were friendly. We weren't really close friends at that time, but it was so exciting to see, you know, Google Gobble, one of us, a guy who started as a rabid fan who wrote for Castle of Frankenstein magazine, ending up graduating to Piranha, from Hollywood Boulevard to Piranha to The Howling to, oh my God, Gremlins. It was great. And nobody was more deserving of that.
Yeah. The puppets were notoriously difficult. Did you see any of that?
Oh, it took forever. But that was to be expected. You know, Chris Whalis, who used to be a makeup effects partner with Bill Malone back in the 70s.
Wow.
They used to do sculptures and makeups and prosthetics and things for movies. together before they split apart and both became directors. But yeah, we saw Gremlins, the big gizmo driving the Barbie car break down several times during that. And then there was a giant gremlin head that had much more intimate and complete expression-making abilities.
Right, but that was for the close-ups. Yeah.
Exactly, the close-up.
When you're watching Joe do it, I mean, and those situations happened, I mean, you know, I watched him on Nightmare Cinema, which is a relatively simple shoot by comparison, but he always maintains his cool. Was he able to do that in those kind of bigger situations?
Joe is an amazing guy. He's a really good guy. He never wants to shake up the confidence of the actors and the crew.
Yeah.
He's always putting on a good face. You know, he when he was doing Explorers, he was totally screwed over by the studio.
Yeah.
And I remember him telling me once that, you know, I feel terrible. I feel like we're making a bad movie, but I have to come in every day with my happy face on and lead the troop into victory,
which I mean, you know, I know he has his, you know, emotional connection to that movie because of that experience, but I love that movie.
Well, all we see is what the movie that came out, and that's great because I love it too.
Yeah,
but boy, I've been on the other side too, where you're making something that you love, and then suddenly
there's pain behind every cut, every shot.
They change course on what they want it to be.
Yep,
and that regime. Under Jeffrey Katzenberg at Paramount at that time, they changed course and made him start shooting before the script was even finished.
But even then, he managed to keep a brave face on.
Completely, yeah. And that one, that one was one that I did a making of on as well.
I did not know that.
I was executive producer of that making of. Huh. That was the DGA issue. So I brought in a guy named Chris Peachin to actually do the directing
That.
But I did the interviews and all that.
I learn something new every time I talk to you.
That's why we do this.
That is the point. Well, on that note, Mick, thank you so much for another year of Postmortem.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks to all our guests. Thanks to all our fans.
And here we're hitting right around 70 episodes by now.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
So you can ask me anything by going to Twitter or Instagram at Mick Garris PM. Check out the Facebook page, Postmortem with Mick Garris, and we look forward to the next one. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you would let the world know about it by reviewing and rating it on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. If you have comments or questions for our Ask Mick Anything shows, send them to producer Joe at Joe Russo Tweets or to at Mick Garris PM on Instagram or Twitter or the Postmortem with Mick Garris Facebook page. This is a brand new address, so don't forget it. That's at Mick Garris PM on both Twitter and Instagram. And if you'd like to see my vintage and recent video interviews, making of documentaries, and audiobooks of some of my short stories, go to my website, mickgarrisinterviews.com.
Thanks for listening to Postmortem with Mick Garris. Download new episodes every other Wednesday and subscribe on iTunes.